The first thing I should say is that everyone should feel free to interrupt me if you have a question, if I'm unclear, and especially if I'm talking too quickly. Because I talk so quick to people, you know, native English speakers. I don't think that was a great talk. I have no idea what you said.
That's the point.
Yeah, I know. It was very impressive. I mean, yes, it was a spectacle. I mean, but it wasn't necessarily because people understood what I was saying. So I'm going to make an effort to stay slow. But if there's a problem, just say, tone it down. Okay. So, all right. I'm going to talk a little bit about the begin here. I'll talk a little bit about the theme. The extending Libre software beyond the IT sphere, because I'm the first person talking on this theme, and because I really like it. The reason I like it is because it assumes that Libre software is more than a software development methodology. Software development methodology, which is something that a lot of the writing on Libre software overlooks, and that's something that I like very much because I'm interested in. My background is more in the. I mean, I am a software developer. I develop a lot of work. I do some work in Debian. I maintain packages. I develop my own applications. But academically, I'm more interested in it as from a sociological or an anthropological perspective, from a communications, legal studies, social studies kind of perspective. So also because by focusing on non-technical issues, we're implying social structures and a framework and the framework for the non-technical interaction within these communities are useful to look at. So the idea is by looking at these communities from an anthropological or a sociological perspective, we can actually gain insight that we can take outside of Libre software. Because if we're going to extend it beyond the sphere, there must mean there's something that's non-technical. Outside of the technology, outside of the code, outside of the methods to develop code, that is in and of itself useful. So that's a little bit about the theme. The set of questions that I have, okay, you're going to talk on this theme. So what is it about Libre software? It's non-technical, it's applicable outside. And the question that I'm looking at is values or ethics or political ideologies. My conclusion was that what we can learn is not that there's, but in terms of these issues of ethics and values, is that there's not a particular set of ethics and values. There's not free software politics, which is something that I'll talk about later in this talk, because it's something that a lot of theorists talk, I think, focus on, free software is anti-capitalist, or free software is capitalist. I don't know. But that's a problem that I have with a lot of the criticism of Libre software. What I do think is that there are certain social structures and practices that are within Libre software that encourage the cultivation and growth of these ethics, of political ideologies, of values, in a way that is productive, that leads to more productive communities, that leads to the production of, in this case, code, but in other cases, perhaps, other things other than code as well. There's a bug in my style sheet, so I have to press on blast to go to the next slide. I will reverse there. This is what I'm not going to be talking about, which is reductive analyses of Libre software. And I put this out here because it's the foil off of which I'm working. This is what I read a lot of, and this is what I want to engage with because it's what I don't want to be doing. So by reductive, I give three examples. You pick one element, okay, this is what I think free software is all about, and I'm going to make an argument that this is what it's all about. And one example is, Libre software is inherently anti-capitalist. I've read articles that say, it's anti-intellectual property, right. I've also read that it is inherently capitalist.
This is really...
Yeah, sure. I mean, that Libre software is inherently a system about limiting capitalism. Capitalism light, which is perhaps the David Bollier or Lawrence Lessig, this idea of we need limits within markets, and free software is a perfect example. Come in. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
I mean, once. I've been talking to this bloke, Graham Simmer is his name, and he made a distinction between open source and free software.
Yes.
Which is, the point I've been trying to avoid.
Well, that's an internal division, which is, and there are internal divisions and ethical divisions.
Yeah.
Right. External.
He focused, I mean, his point was free software people are kind of leftist in perspective, paying their taxes, wanting a more Marxist viewpoint on their life,
right,
while open source people are more, let's say, scoffing at the protective role of the state, unwilling to pay taxes, more decentralized,
there
people.
Well, there may be, you know, fact is,
I'm not convinced, that's not my point. Well, okay, well, that there may be a point in that.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
hi, David Turner, Free Software Foundation. My coworker Paul Fisher describes himself as a libertarian, which is essentially this opposed to a larger government thing. And yeah, he's at Free Software Foundation, so I don't think that you can make that same sort of categorical statement that free software people are this sort of larger state leftists as opposed to the more individualist people.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree. I think that both of them, that there's this larger movement around, which I'll talk about, this concept of broadly defined freedom. And I think I would draw the line, and I'll talk about this distinction a little later, but really quickly, and I can skip over this when I come to it later, is that it's more of a open source seems to approach this as a software development methodology, whereas free software is more of a philosophical, I don't know, it's about freedom. And I think that you can, that that's not necessarily tied. There are libertarians who can come at it from on both sides, and that there are, you know, libertarians, which is, I guess, you know, people on the right, people on the left, and that in fact these distinctions break down within this larger definition of freedom.
Do with capitalism or not capitalism?
No, absolutely. It has everything to do with both. If we just hold off, if you have questions, it's fine. But I'm going to get here.
We don't let through capitalism. We will come back to capitalism.
Okay, we will. And if I don't talk about this enough, interrupt me then. So the idea was that obviously those are problematic because you can't have two of them at once, you know, and it's also problematic because, you know, there are people in this room who are, you know, into capitalism, there are people that are into limits on capitalism, and there are people that are, you know, anti-capitalist anarchists and everything in between, big government leftists, who knows? I mean, and there are people that are interested in free software from every one of these, so there's something else going on here. So anyway, that was the problem. That's not, you know, that's the problematic way. The way that, you know, my answer is that rather than doing reductive analysis, I want to look at it from a sociological or anthropological perspective. And that's done by, you know, working within, in my case, observing, considering, looking at these communities themselves and the body of practice itself. And by working from practice, rather than working to apply a methodology to practice or to, you know, describe practice from pieces that I like, I actually try to, you know, work within and live within, which is great because it's a community that I do work and live within. So, okay. All right. Into the talk. I see two areas that I'm going to talk about. There are many more. But there are two areas where non-ITs, where we can learn from, non-IT can learn from libre software. The first is the cultivation of ethics through three ways: institutional independence, volunteer labor, and networks of trust. And I'll talk about each three individually. This is just a summary. And the second one is political affiliation to and around a broadly defined concept of freedom, where I'll talk about both internal divisions, free software and open source, and external organizations, you know, external divisions. Okay? Anyone lost yet, or not yet, you're about to become lost? Okay.
Hey, Clayton, where are you going? Sit down.
I just attended another workshop.
Okay,
yeah,
love to stay.
Okay.
Next time. You can go to the next one.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that libre software communities are ethical communities, and although the particular group of the ethics can be either more prominent or more important, or they can be on the background. I think that the Debian and Gentoo, which both have social contracts, and Apache has something like it a little bit, are perhaps uncharacteristically explicit examples, but still good examples, and they're not necessarily unique. I don't know if people are familiar with the Debian social contract, but
Which is the foundation of the open source license.
Well, no, the free software guidelines were the definitely free software guidelines were the foundation of the open source definition. What they didn't take was a social contract that every developer must understand and agree to before they become a Debian developer. It says things like, I don't have internet here, I pull it up.
I've lost it for the same document that parents put together.
Here, I'll show you.
It was deployed from the basis of what became
user source chunk, Debian, and social contract. And let me make this bigger.
Font on the iframe, too, I think.
Yeah, let's see. Larger. I can read it. It says, Debian will remain 100% free software. We promise to keep Debian entirely free software. There are many definitions. We'll give you one. We'll give back to the free software community. We won't hide problems. Our priorities are our users and free software. Programs that don't meet our free software, and what we'll do with programs that don't meet our standards. So, as a result, it's based around the system of radical non-discrimination, transparency, commitment to users and to the free software community and to the principles of free software. So, there's an explicit ethical, ethical framework which every Debian developer must agree to before they can work in it. I don't know if I'm a Debian developer, so I'm actually I've agreed to this contract and I work within the system. So, okay. So then the three ways that I mentioned before are the first one is institutional independence. And many Libre software communities are institutionally independent. And often, even if they're tied to an organization, like for example, Debian is tied to the to the software in public interest. Red Hat Linux is tied to Red Hat Incorporated. I mean, through practical means, but through licenses, they are free. And as a result, if you want to come in if you want.
French.
Okay. No, English.
No, we don't take French here.
So even groups that are dependent through affiliated with an institution are independent up through licensing, and they can, and in fact, in many cases, have been forked. The results of this are that Libre software ethics are cultivated and critiqued outside these institutional oppressors, and other things. These can be financing reasons, they can be public relation reasons, there can be institutional affiliations, like this company has a agreement to not create something that competes with this other company or with another aspect of the same company, so they won't go down that road. These type of affiliations can be play major roles in non-Libre software spheres. A counterexample that I put up, an example of where, and the counterexamples that I give are kind of an example, a place outside of Libre software where institutional pressures are a big deal. And the one I give is, I said academic research, because academic, and I think I may use this one over and over, but academic research, many academics' relationship to, tenure and promotions and appearances and pressures and departmental goals, so the department has one way they want to take their research and you want to go a different way. All these things will affect what is produced, the type of knowledge that's produced, the type of product that's produced, the type of practice. And by separating themselves from that framework, Libre software are able to create their own ethics that drive the practice itself. Is that clear? Okay. The second one that I put down here is volunteer labor, which is connected to institutional independence, but not necessarily. Volunteer labor frees participation. Frees participants from the influences of money. And it's one way to ensure that labor is self-valorizing, which is a fancy word for saying that the product and the processes have value in and of themselves, and that they're not connected to the money that's paid for it, which is actually a little bit of a better description, because the fact that it has value outside of, that its value comes from within, is more important than the fact that it's free, as in gratis. So you can make money from it, as long as it's, if you're making money from it, but it's a self-valorizing product, then the fact that you're making money isn't influencing what's produced, the nature of the production, and the value within it, which is a subtle distinction, but I think an important one. The results of this are that the use of extensive use of volunteer labor for software projects. Debian is entirely volunteer; they've never paid anyone, as far as I know. I don't want to
say something and then
to prove it wrong, but Libre software community's labor is on the whole self-valorizing. Volunteer-based projects are often funded. People come in and throw money at a project, but usually these projects, if they've created a viable volunteer project. Often the money will just, well, sometimes the money will direct it all towards a particular goal. I'll give you money if you add this set of features that you don't care about otherwise. That happens. But sometimes it's all give you money to keep working on this the way you have, which maintains the self-valorizing quality. The software is more responsive to the needs of its users, regardless of, you know, the rich users don't get to decide the feature set, you know? I mean, hackers get to decide the feature set. Welcome back. Okay, and then I put two counter. I'll do the counter examples. But my two counter examples are doctors and their relationship with the pharmaceutical and health industries, which is incredibly problematic. Ethics are. I don't know if this is as big a deal in countries with socialized healthcare, but in the States where it's completely private,
it's the same.
Okay,
this problem becomes the same, even if it is a social system that pays.
Oh, really?
There's this kind of demonic relationship.
So as a result, one would say it's not ethical for a doctor to be, you know, well, we have to see a certain number of patients every day, so let's cut each visit by 15 minutes on average. I mean, that's problematic, right? I mean, if your job is to, you know, help people, and you have explicit ethics in doctors, you have an oath you take when you become a doctor, but. I mean, it seems that if you have a financial system that's encouraging people to modify their behavior in ways that many doctors feel influences their ability to carry out the ethical goals of their profession. So that one's clear. The other one is academic scientists and grants, so let's say for military and corporate interests. And this leads to the growing proprietarianization of academic research, which comes from public money as well, which is a problem. But it just, you know, do I research something that, you know, feeds a million people, or do I research something that, you know, builds a bigger bomb? Well, the money isn't the thing that builds the bigger bomb, regardless of the ethical implications of that. So, okay. Yeah.
How do you explain that? The things that happens... that in academic, in some place where normally they are more ethical, they are independent, academic research, there is...
Are they independent?
They used to be, at least, I don't know...
In Plato's time!
Yes, if you see mathematicians since Greek, so...
I'm not an academic, I just, you know, take a look at what's happening at the university attentively. And you see, I mean, what's the criteria used for academics to promote it? Research and teaching. So they end up writing some paper or whatever. And they have been paid by the uni to do that, write the paper. And then they send it to German, which is going to take something like 2 years peer review process. And then the uni that's paying the same lecturer, the same academic to write the paper, is going to give an awful lot of money to the journal. So that the journal is available
right.
In the library,
well,
and takes so much time, so much money.
Okay, the point that this doesn't happen so much,
it's
in software.
Well, it's that's actually a double problem. That makes
are there
up
many
the institutional.
Another question: are there many libre software developers that are hired finally by Microsoft or another?
That's the thing is that there are many libre software developers, and this is something I'll talk about in the end. But there are many Libre software developers who work for software companies in the day, right? But the fact is, because they work within, and this is an argument that maybe I'm bullshit here, I don't know, but this is something that I'm a little less sure about. But I believe that the cultivation of ethics within Libre software communities actually reflects and has an, you know, ethicalizing, I don't think that's a word, but, you know, it makes the practice of other software development. That Libre software developers are more likely to push for use of Libre software in their organization. I think that's true, right? So we have for ethical reasons.
There's also the inverse effect. As proprietary software companies adopt free software, we find that they want to bend and stretch what's allowed. You know,
right, right.
Licenses that are like, you know, as proprietary as they can be while still fitting the free software definition or the open source definition.
Right.
Or trying to stretch the GPL. You'll find this a lot in with kernel modules. Well, what about if I just use this interface or I just change this little bit to make my module work?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and that's
this happens.
I mean, I think that that's. I mean, I think that part of that is part of that is you know this a rough transition phase where you have a lot of these people in this weird place. But I think that I think I'm still willing to make an argument. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think there is a valid argument to say that the cultivation of ethics within Libre software communities affects other communities. I don't know if it makes them Libre software communities, but it makes them, it imbues them with a particular type of, with a more ethical stance, right? So the idea is, I'm not saying eliminate volunteer labor, eliminate institutions. But you can still have institutions, you can still have paid labor, you know? But if you have an active, you know, if all doctors were to volunteer a significant amount of time and work outside of institutions, it would reflect back on their work within institutions, and they would be more critical of the connections between the pharmaceutical industries. They would be more critical of this. That's a more difficult argument to make, but I think that having a valuable cultivation of ethics for these communities will actually reflect back and help to make these non-Libre software communities more ethical in the same way that maybe it will apply to academics. And then the last one. Is that cool? Volunteer labor. Pretty clear.
Yes, just one question. You're saying that, in fact, ethical projects just don't need to fund their people. So what about Free Software Foundation? They are paying people, so they are not...
We do not write any. We not, do not pay anyone to develop software of any kind, including the herd.
Oh.
There's one technical employee, right? Paul is the only technical employee, right?
That's right. And he does write the stuff that we use internally. I wrote a few lines myself for dealing with Kater's registration. But it's not... and, of course, if you want free software, GPL, etc., but that's not the sort of software development that Debian is doing, or that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. I don't think Debian's never paid. Software in the public interest has never paid. So the two biggest American free software companies, and I imagine applies to Europe as well, have never paid a developer. I don't know. Open source initiative. Do they fund projects?
I don't think so either.
So there's money coming into these projects sometimes. But often the money is not from these institutions. When Debian gets money, I mean, Debian has money sitting in the bank account because we can't spend it. Because, I mean, how many machines do we need? And machines are all donated. So, like, what can we buy except for hardware? And, you know, I mean, at DevConf we have At DevConf, I mean, at the Debian conference, I mean, we're having all our meals paid for. Because, I mean, what else are we doing this money for? So, okay, so networks of trust. This is the last bit on this cultivation of ethics. In smaller projects, there are ad hoc systems of trust, and then you know everyone who works on the project. And what's interesting is that in larger projects, especially larger projects that used to be smaller projects, which is all of them, a lot of them have tried to, because this type of trust is no longer as difficult to build, they've had new systems to stand in. One of them is cryptographic systems of trust, which is huge, which is, as people are familiar with, GBG, PGP or GBG, the term is web of trust. You know, there is a Debian web of trust, and there was an example of a developer who was very high profile, who was not in a web of trust. He was the president of the technical committee. And it was like, what are we going to do? And someone announced this on a Debian mailing list. And within 48 hours, he had three people who had driven out to his house and signed his key. Because having this connection, every single Debian developer, I can get from me to almost any other developer through I know someone that knows someone that knows someone. And it's low. The average distance from me to any other developer is less than three. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yes, but you're collecting GPG keys.
But the average for the entire thing is relatively low as well. It's a very tightly bound. It's a very tightly bound connection. The Debian web of trust is very tight. And then there are other social systems of trust, which in Debian there's a new maintainer process, which I believe Martin might talk about tomorrow. But the new maintainer process is, if you want to become a developer, you need to do, you know, you need to demonstrate technical ability, you need to demonstrate adherence to knowledge of and adherence to the social contract, to the concepts of free software, the philosophy of free software, and to, you know, policy and procedure. So there's a way of standardizing, okay, what?
How do you verify that?
There, you work with an application manager. I'm an application manager, so new maintainers, if they come in, they'll be assigned an existing developer. We'll work with them, make sure they understand this, and then they'll recommend they be accepted to the project. So the idea is that you can assume that every Debian developer is technically competent, they're not going to break the entire thing. That they understand policy, so they don't break the entire thing, or a small piece of the thing. And that they have met another developer, so they're within this web of trust. You can't get in unless you're in the web of trust. So I can, even though I've never met developers, I can trust that they are, you know, I can trust them to some extent, yeah? Trust. The results are that libre software developers can engage in meaningful dialogue about technical and ethical issues, right? And that it allows for a cultivation of ethics because within this web of trust. And that counterproductive concerns of co-optation or competition and dilution disappear or are at least de-emphasized within these communities because it's a trusted community. We can work together and we know this. It's an explicitly bound together through non-technical means, yeah? And then I used the medical example here. I'm picking on them. Spaces for dialogue within the medical community, for example, the American Medical Association and the World Health Organization, support only, I mean, they have a magazine they publish, you know, but they don't have, and they have, you know, several meetings they have, but there's no space to go and, let's talk about, you know, this ethics, you know, at least outside of very small groups, either that you create, or high-level management, which doesn't get on to people. So there's no grassroots cultivation of ethics or space for the cultivation of ethics in an organization like that. And because there's no trust among the groups. And there are small groups like Doctors Without Borders is one. A group, there's Emergency is an Italian group that does something similar. I mean, like, there are these, you know, very ethically geared medical groups that are very critical of some of the things that are going on. But they're small and self-contained, and there are probably systems of trust within them, but it hasn't expanded to encompass these larger organizations. So, okay. All right. Do you think it's necessary to do this? An example, when you take the medical profession, I think it's understood, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? No? Anyone want to run through an example, like pick on medicine more? Or it's okay? Okay. All right. Okay, and take a breath, because I'm on to the second part. Halfway there, or more than halfway there. This is the jump that's a little, this transition that's a little difficult for me, because it's moving from, talking about ethics is easy, but now I want to talk a little bit about politics, which is connected to ethics, but in an interesting way. So, I'm going to use this, let's see, here we go, all right. I'm making this argument, and I'm not the first person to make this. I've written a number of papers with an anthropologist who's studying free software communities, Debian in particular, who's written a paper that's kind of pointing toward this argument. There's this commitment to a concept of broadly defined freedom, and that within this libre software community, which I'm including both the free and open source movements here, free and open source communities, and while it's significantly different in emphasizing while there's significantly different emphases within these different communities or within, you know, different groups, you know, capitalist and anti-capitalist groups that are not necessarily free software practitioners, they both are working within this larger concept of freedom that includes, in Debian's case, you know, and I think in the larger ones, ideas of radical non-discrimination, uninhibited use and reuse, transparency, and these things that are common to both. I mean, I'd say that you can argue, they can argue that these are common within the larger free software movement. And I'm not going to actually, I'm not going to talk about what it is, about, I'm just saying, okay, broadly defined freedom, trust me on this. I'm not going to go into in this talk about what this means, what those ethics are, what these politics are, you know, in the larger picture, but if we want to talk about that at the end, that's cool. Okay, so... present. So the first, and this is broken up. Let's see, I can give you a little bit of a heads up here. I break it up into political diversity within the communities, development communities within the user communities, and then political diversity obviously with people who are taking the Libre software, philosophy or mentality, or becoming inspired by Libre software. And then I talk a little bit about the problems. And I finish up. So, in the development communities. OSI, not the important people. Okay, the free software movement, the free software communities, which I'm saying FSF, Solomon. There's Debian to a degree, although Debian has people that are definitely saying, an open source person as well. Emphasize freedom and, I don't know, compute that's large. Actually, we talked about this a little bit. So this is just that little difference that I presented before. So people are comfortable, distinguishing their different groups within, there are different groups within free software, within this Libre software movement. There are free software people who have there are people who emphasize a pretty larger critique of the system of software intellectual property and emphasizing philosophical and civil libertarian advantages, and the open source movement, which focuses more on Libre software as a development methodology than a social movement, and emphasizes pragmatic. Faster, cheaper. Okay, sorry. So I mean, is this clear though? Do I need to repeat anything here, or?
This was not fully clear.
Okay. So we got broken it up into free software. I'm saying within the development communities, there are different groups. There's the free software movement, which emphasizes more, software freedom, Libre software, and this critique of the larger system of software intellectual property. And then the open source movement, which is more emphasizing it as a development methodology, emphasizing pragmatic advantages. But the idea is that both of these are dependent on and working within this larger concept of broadly defined freedom. Yeah, sure, they're emphasizing different aspects of it. Sure, broadly defined freedom.
You think finally is the same?
I think it's like the Venn diagram thing. Within, you see what I'm saying? Emphasizing different pieces within. It's not so simple. It's not that simple, but this is the basic concept, right? That there's broadly defined freedom, and I'm willing to. Last time I made this argument was to a bunch of anthropologists. So they're like, great, that's not so interesting. But actually taking it and talking to, legal software people, practitioners, people that are involved in this is I think a good process for me because it helps me. They're going to be a lot more critical than people who have no idea what I'm talking about. They're like, oh yeah, he's in that, he knows what he's talking about. But I know, maybe not. This is easier. And this is also where it begins to get fun. Had Libre software been codified as either right, left, or right, I don't think it would be as easily approachable by a diversity of users. I mentioned to David earlier today that we were talking about there's a proto-GPL. It was released by Stallman for some piece of software, maybe even very early on in Emacs, where it talks about you need to first join the software sharing commune. I think that language of software sharing commune, is because it's connected to other political movements, I think it would actually be prohibitive in letting both, in users as well. I think that a good example of this is software written by Indie Media, which is a radical political left media organization. They say fuck in the news. And a lot of people don't like that. I don't read news when they say fuck, they have a black background. which is a big deal. Non-political sites don't have black. What?
I know in the media, but they develop software.
They have 8 pieces of software that all do the same thing. Sort of. They do slightly different things. And it's because one of them says, you have this kind of moderation, that's fascist moderation. So therefore, we're not going to implement it, yeah? But there are 8 pieces of software. And the thing is, some of them are very good. Some of them are really, impressive pieces of software. But people are not going to pick it up. It's going to be a hard sell to go to this site with a black background and a bunch of people saying fuck and have pictures of, anarchism or who knows. and get your content management system for your corporate website. It's just not going to happen. Or not very often. Someone's going to need to, you know, clean it up, give it a light background. You know, I'm serious. Because those things are counterculture. Because it is political charged. However, we have the same pieces of Libre software, the same software that's being used by indie media, radical anti-capitalists, IBM, which is, you know, not radical capitalists, but they're all about capitalism, you know. They're this, sure. And again, the commons movement, which is capitalism, like, I don't know.
Restraint.
limit, let's put limits on capitalism, you know. Limit the market. Create commons within the market.
Just call it diet capitalism.
I think that's offensive to some of the people out there. But you know, this idea of let's put limits within a market system, you know, as opposed to indie media, we're saying, you know, let's eliminate the market system. Let's put limits within that market system, right? Okay. And they all use it. Okay. And then this is the real fun stuff. Is that I have the same list if you look below, but each of these organizations, in the last slide, also they don't just use Libre software as, you know, a web server. They also use it as an inspiration, a direct and explicit inspiration for their non-technical work, taking it out of the IT sphere. The great part is that they're using this to base their, you know, for their philosophies and their actions, which are geared for completely contradictory goals. We are going to use free software as an example of using, you know, a type of freedom that will, you know, create non-capitalist production and will eventually, you know, provide an alternative to capitalism. Free software is an example of this great market system that will eventually, you know, I don't know, have capitalism realize its ultimate glory. And we'll get really rich and there'll be real competition and it's, you know, great. This is the kind of the libertarian version. And the commons movement thinks that it's a great example of, wow, look at the GPL. Like, it's this, you know, it's this great method for securing things within a market system. You can create legally enforced commons and you can pull from them and back, you know. And the thing is that I don't think any of them are wrong. I think they're completely valid applications, right? But within this concept of broadly defined freedom, you can take it and put it into service for capitalism, anti-capitalism, or limits on capitalism, and each one is a valid way of doing this. So both for the use, internal factionalism, in terms of taking it outside. So okay, there are some problems with this though. One of them is that within these free software communities, there's fears of co-optation, as in, if I don't want to develop software, I mean, this is true, I don't want to develop software that's used to, you know, I don't know, kill people, develop atom bombs, you know, I don't want the military using my software. I don't. Well, that's kind of a problem, yeah.
What are you doing then?